At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Technique. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Why is choosing Stafford over Stroud crazy under any circumstances? Stafford is not only a product of Texas high school football, but he's a state champion. There's nothing to discuss. Stroud is a Cali guy. They don't know squat about football. That from Ocho. That is a good point. Okay. Texas football over California football. No argument there. 713-780-ESPN. Stafford may be dead if he played for the Texans. It would look way different, but he's getting rid of the football, man. Like, Stafford has always gotten rid of the football. They were lollygagging because D'Amico motivates with positivity, the power of positivity. I think D'Amico's motivation tactics are getting a little bit of catching some strays, some unjust strays. I don't think D'Amico is like, rah-rah in the locker room and on the practice field is like the public image is of him. I don't really buy that.
Well, I think that no one should feel like anything that you see at a press conference is the way that it is when no media is allowed and there's only the access of team personnel. I don't have anything where I'm failing to believe in D'Amico Ryans as a leader, as a coach, as a defensive coordinator. And the rest remains to be seen as it relates to the changes he made yet again with the offense, with the coaching staff, and everything that they did personnel-wise.
Hot take, Stroud isn't happy. He doesn't like, respect D'Amico, him and Titus yelling at Ryans for punting the ball. He gets traded this offseason. That's all conjecture. Like, we don't really know that. Like, we can't define that. I don't believe that, though. I do think that Stroud is happy. I think that he does respect D'Amico. I don't think him and Titus yelling at D'Amico for punting the ball is really that big a deal. I don't know how much Stroud was yelling at D'Amico. Titus definitely was, being pretty demonstrative towards D'Amico, which, I don't know if I love my offensive lineman yelling at my head coach on the sideline like that.
I don't think he needs to. I mean, that's from a respect standpoint. That's something that probably also behind closed doors needs to be tightened up, because you are going to have a lot of decisions that are going to happen during the course of a season where you might not agree with them as a player. But it ain't your choice, and they're doing what they, for their job's sake, doing their job. They're doing the best thing they think for this team. So deal with it.
There was I thought three game management issues that are worthy of the conversation. That was one of them, where it was like 4th and 1 at their own 25, basically, down by 1. That's when Titus was yelling at them. Do you think they should have went for it?
I didn't like it in their own territory. Game over if you don't get it.
I didn't like it either. To me, that was an easy punt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mind that at all either. How about, this is one that bothered me, quite frankly. Rams are driving right at the end of the first half. They get a 1st and goal situation, run the ball stuff. Texans take a timeout because they want to get the ball back. They want to score, so they take a quick timeout. 2nd down, run, stuff, another quick timeout because they want to get the ball, they want to go score. 3rd down run, you stuff Kyren Williams at the goal line, and you let the clock run. You don't use your last and final timeout. So wisely, McVay, who wants to give the Texans as little as time as possible, runs it all the way down to 1 second, takes a timeout. We'll round up a few seconds for the sake of the conversation to make it some easy math. Would you rather have a minute 40 on the clock with no timeouts, or would you rather have a minute on the clock with one timeout?
I definitely want 1:40 with no timeouts.
To me, this is a no-brainer.
I can get a 1st down. I can down the ball several times when I need to.
Multiple ways you can stop the ball. Mm-hmm. Run out of bounds. Yep. Throw an incomplete pass. People were like, people were seriously arguing with me about this.
You know why?
I couldn't believe it.
Well, in real time?
Yeah.
Or after the half ended?
Both.
I think it's easy in retrospect when the half ends to fight against you because they did, and still ended up getting a field goal. But what if they got a touchdown? Because
but they didn't use a timeout. They didn't use a timeout, period. So, like, you could be like, well, they got a field goal, but I could be like, well, they didn't use a timeout. They would have had 40 more seconds.
But I'm saying the fans thing is we still got points out of it. So what does it matter? But you're not looking big picture of it could matter a whole lot in a very low scoring game if you got a touchdown instead of a field goal. So that's where I would say from there. I'm not saying it's my perspective.
Right. No, I know you're playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, I think from a lot of fans' perspectives, hey, we got a field goal out of it, so what?
That was really dumb to me.
It was.
That was really dumb, especially if you have a quarterback, and maybe they don't trust CJ Stroud. If you have a quarterback that you think is really good in those situations, a two-minute offense, give me 140, no timeouts, over a minute, to one timeout.
And like, he's done it for you before.
He's done it before. Like, if you're Mahomes, if you ask Pat Mahomes, minute 40, no timeouts, minute one timeout, what is he saying?
He's taken 140.
What about Josh Allen?
Oh, all of them.
What about Lamar Jackson?
All of them.
Peyton Manning.
For sure.
Tom Brady. Any offensive mind in the history of the game. I could not stand that he didn't take a timeout there. That bothered me more than it should have. And yes, you still get three, but you could have had an opportunity to get seven in a 14-9 game.
That's a game
that you lost by five.
Yeah, like, that's the point I'm making, is the fact that you knew going into this game both defenses were good enough to keep the other team below 20 points.
That bothered me more than it should. I thought that was elementary game management, and D'Amico just bled the clock there and took the minute one timeout instead of a minute 40 no timeout. That I didn't think that was good game management by D'Amico Ryans whatsoever. Also, the interception was Stroud, which wasn't his fault. Completely agree. The ball was caught, like, one, you can talk about the review here. Like, the ball hit the ground and did a half turn, and they still said
it slid, like, up instead of rotating.
I thought it did both. I thought
Gene was trying to say that it didn't move enough, but that the referee expects that when it hits the ground with force, it is going to come up. I didn't see it rotate, but at the same time,
what'd you think? You think it was a catch or a no catch?
I could easily see it being incomplete because it was more than just the nose of the football touching the ground. It pounded into the ground, and his elbow was kind of wide, so it did go straight up. Maybe it didn't rotate, but it did go straight up.
I saw one of these numbers.
Yeah, I just saw the football go, when it hit the ground, slide up in the
I saw tightness. A 90-degree turn. But so watching it back, catch or no catch in your mind?
No catch.
Are you okay with it being a stands? Like the replay, it stands as opposed to it's confirmed? Like, can you justify the replay review, it stands? I thought it was the worst it stands call in the history of the game.
If they looked at it, and after every angle that they have, and I assume that we saw most of what they saw, regardless of what they saw, if they just feel like it stands, I feel like you have to deal with it.
Well, sure. And the defense did. They got a three and out. It didn't really matter in the course of the game. I thought it was a bad replay review. I didn't believe the stands at all. Because there's moments where it's like, okay, I think that one's out, but I could understand that it's not clear and conclusive and it stands. I thought it was clear, conclusive, obvious that should not have been a catch.
Replays, it was clear enough replays, to overturn it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Replays felt otherwise. But anyways... So I was looking at Twitter after the game, and Jonathan Alexander had a quote that D'Amico Ryan says that he didn't challenge that call because he saw it right in front of him and he knew it was a catch or whatever. And whenever I saw that, I was like, I'm going to pull the audio on that because D'Amico doesn't know the rules. Pulling the audio, he might have been framed a little bit, because take a listen. Jonathan Alexander asking D'Amico Ryan why he didn't challenge that.
Was there any thought in challenging the interception by Kobe Durant? And then I'll ask the second.
I saw the interception there. It was right in front of me. Kid made a nice play on the football, so there was not a thought to challenge it because I was right there in front and saw the kid made a really nice play.
Okay. The interceptions and turnovers, interceptions included, turnovers cannot be challenged by a coach because all turnovers are reviewed by the replay review booth, whatever they're calling them, as they happen. Whenever I read the quote in isolation, I was like, uh-oh, D'Amico doesn't know the rules here. But the question kind of frames him that I think you can give D'Amico the out because he answered the question that said, did you think about challenging that? So, like, are you giving D'Amico the leeway here?
Unless you were squatting down and, like, at ground level to see
good point
the impact of the football, even if it happened right in front of you, I can't let the naked eye decide that one.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So, like, one, it's like, okay, well, that's a weird take that, one, you wouldn't have challenged it because you saw it right in front of you. Two, you can't challenge it. Yeah. You can't challenge a turnover in the NFL. It's instigated by the review, the booth. Like Brian Callahan's getting crushed today. Have you seen this?
No.
Where he did the whole like one was it one elbow or knee? Do you know age? He said that it was either an elbow or knee. I think it was an elbow. He said that one elbow is not worth 2 feet in the NFL, which it is. Yeah. Elbow down is the same as 2 feet, mm-hmm. and he's getting crushed for that today. D'Amico Ryans. If it is true that he thinks that he can challenge turnovers, should be catching the same heat as Brian Callahan. He does not know the rule of the game. Now, the way that Alexander asked the question, D'Amico might have gotten framed here. So, like, I'm giving D'Amico the benefit of the doubt because the questioner, whoever was asking the question, kind of he didn't know the rule. Like he asked D'Amico, did you put any thought in challenging that when you can't challenge it? So I wonder if D'Amico does know the rule, but when he heard the question, he just kind of used the words of the question. And do we give him the benefit of the doubt for that? Because you can't do it. You can't do it. So does D'Amico not know the rule, or was D'Amico framed and kind of just used that question?
I would lean more towards framing.
I'm willing to do it too.
Because of the fact that why are you going to challenge and get a review on a play that's already been reviewed?
Well, it would have been in the moment, but that's also the weird part of it. Yeah. It's like it did go under review. The refs literally reviewed it.
Now, from how D'Amico responds, that should have been one of your initial responses.
That was a weird question. So I'm willing to give D'Amico the benefit of the doubt here, but if I'm wrong and I shouldn't be giving him the benefit of the doubt, then D'Amico Ryans did not know the rule.
Yeah, I believe that I think he did. I just think that that's something where. Whether you say it's the way the framing of the question or not, I'm not gonna put that one on him. I had another one I was gonna put on him, and I can't remember in the context of getting deep into that conversation. It slipped my mind.
Let me know if you think of it, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt too. But he said he didn't put any thought into challenging that play when it cannot be a head coach challenge, and it literally was challenged. So, but by the video replay review staff or whatever. All right, 713-780-ESP. Let's hit the Kaylee conversation. We'll talk about the defense too, because people were sour on the defense. People weren't happy with the defense. We'll get into that stuff as well. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Texter says, I think D'Amico just didn't want to be a jerk to the media guy. That's very much in play.
Very much.
Very much in play. I'm giving D'Amico the benefit of the doubt 100%. Just remembering that, you probably got misled, probably got framed, didn't want to be a jerk, all of those things. Just in case something like this happens again. Like, I'm storing it away in the back of my mind that this happened once upon a time that we did not put blame on D'Amico for.
Fair.
But if he runs into another spot where he botches a challenge, it's like, ooh, maybe he didn't know the rule. So just paying attention to it. All I'm doing. Just paying attention to it. Did you remember the other game management thing?
Yeah, it wasn't even a game management thing. It was just on D'Amico. There were multiple occasions where Henry To'o was left on Davante Adams, and Davante was short of throwing up a flare. Was trying to let Stafford know he loved the matchup and he could easily. And Stafford, on one that I really vividly remember, he was in the left slot, Davante is waving and trying to get Stafford's attention. And Stafford, after the snap, completely looks to the other side, and they did get a gain out of it. And Davante broke wide open in the middle of the field. I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe he didn't see that.
He just missed it.
Yeah, there was a couple of them. Even with Petrie, I don't want Petrie on Davante if I can help it. The scary thing was when Stingley went down and Petrie was your answer at the other corner.
No, they brought in Jalen Smith.
No, they brought Petrie played the first play right out of, at least that's what was, and the broadcaster said that too, that for the first play when Stingley went out, that Petrie was the guy that was playing outside corner.
Maybe he moved outside and they put Jalen inside.
I think maybe after that they might have
switched. Or motion took him outside. Like, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense that you would pay a safety at your boundary corner. Like, I'll go back and watch that one, okay. But I have a tough time believing
definitely
that.
Yeah, if you see differently.
Because Stingley missed five plays, and Jalen Smith played exactly five plays.
Yeah, I thought maybe you're right. Maybe they just got where they were on the field based on motion,
probably
change things,
which is very easy to put Petrie in bad matchups.
I'm in cringe mode the minute that I hear anything about Petrie on Devontae Adams.
But it's very easy to scheme that, like very easy. Like I saw a bunch of people were like, "Whoa, I hate when Petrie's defending this guy or that guy." Well, don't you think a good offensive mind is going to scheme up a way to get their best receiver on Jalen Petrie? Like, football is a weakest link sport. And if you could find a matchup you like, you're going to hunt that until the other team adjusts. So it's very easy to get good matchups with your good receivers against Jalen Petrie. It's why I was stunned that they gave Jalen Petrie so much money.
I agree with you. I think that, again, when we start talking about like depth and what your plan is doing, we talked about this leading into the game. That there was going to be multiple. They did it a year ago. McVay is an offensive mind that's brilliant enough that he's going to find a way, not that I thought it was ever going to be a linebacker, but that he was going to find a way that one of his two best receivers was going to be on their third or lesser corners that were available in the game. Even the Jets a year ago, when they got with Devon, they were going to find a way between their two receivers to create a matchup inside or wherever it is, that they were going to avoid Stingley and Lassiter and get somebody else on him. And it works. So you're right. It was going to happen. I just didn't think it was going to be toe-to-toe.
Yeah. Yeah. Dre says that Petrie didn't come into the game until the third play of the game. I guess they started off base, maybe. They start off in 4-3. That would explain that. Petrie played in 55 of the 60 plays. They must have went 4-3 in a few packages. I'd have to go watch specifically which ones. So did you think the defense played good, bad, in between? Because I thought that they played good, and people thought I was nuts for saying they played good.
You hold any NFL team the caliber of Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua, Devontae Adams, and more to 14 points, you've more than done your job. You did a good job.
You went on the road against a team that is led by Sean McVay, has a Hall of Fame Super Bowl winning quarterback, that has Puka Nacua, who one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL. That dude's a freak. You busted him wide open. Thought he might have been knocked out of the game, and he comes back in with a big, giant white patch covering up his entire eye, and he still schools you. That dude is a dog.
After that, it was still bleeding, and he had to leave again to find a different mode of being able to tighten that thing up.
How could you not respect the heck out of that guy?
He's tough as nails, man.
Yeah. I already like Puka Nacua. I like him even more now. That guy is, he's a tough son of a gun.
Tell you what, the Devontae hit too that he took.
Like, and he just got right on
it. I know it.
It actually hurt Stingley.
Your guy on the backside of it leaves the game, and Devontae basically gets bent backwards with impact and just keeps going.
That was a vicious hit. No, I think that the defense played good too. For the things that you said, like this, they held the Rams under 300 yards yesterday. That you don't do that in the NFL. Like, teams go for more than 300 yards. You know how many teams in the NFL average less than 300 allowed per game last year? One, the Eagles. There was one team in the NFL that allowed less than 300 yards per game. It was the Eagles. I think it was the Chargers. They allowed the fewest points per game, and it was like 16.5. So you allowed 14 points on the road to McVay, Stafford, Puka, Devontae, Kyren Williams, which would be first in the NFL last year. You allowed less than 300 yards, which would have been second, and the defense played bad?
Keep going.
No way. Defense was good.
Kyren Williams, a guy that you would think from a running perspective is going to, at some point, will gash you but get some yards. And they held him in check, too, almost the entire football game. Their running game was not anything that you were concerned with. I think for that and the extra that was tagged onto it, their defense was good. It's going to be their calling card all year, but to start the season against a team that good and do what you did, I don't think that any shade should be thrown at the defense today.
And the offense didn't really put the defense in great spots. Like, the other part of it, too. Like, they weren't bailing out the defense ever, the offense, with these long, sustaining drives, putting touchdowns on the board. Like, the offense kind of hurt the chances of the defense. 713-780-ESPN, Stingley didn't look great. I wonder if part of it is because he was a little banged up. Stingley.
Yeah, there was someone that posted on Twitter some close-up video insinuating that he was wincing on every play. I didn't see that. I think that it was unfortunate because even looking at the replay of that, I don't think that it looked like he took something serious. It would be more like maybe a muscle or something like that or a hip pointer. But even on impact from the hit coming at him, I think having Devontae in between, as much as they were saying it helped Devontae, I think it also helped Stingley avoid what could have been a whole hell of a lot worse.
Maybe so if there's contact. To me, it didn't look great on the oblique. I'll be honest, when Stingley left the game, I didn't think he was coming back in.
I thought that when he went to the tent, that's one of those where I thought it was muscular. But I think that if you pull something like just like doing something else, you know, pulling any muscle when it comes to your torso or your hip in that area, especially as a corner, I think that it was, I was worried about him coming back. But I, well, looking at the replay, I think I felt better that it wasn't like impactful. Like he took a severe a hit on a bone or something where it could be something broken.
You're talking about all these hunting for matchups. I mean, you get a tear. Like, it's worse a lot of times than a break. Like a torn ACL is far worse than a broken leg.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't love the ligament stuff.
Neither one
I mean,
of them
ligament
is great,
stuff can cost you a year.
But you know it's a break that breaks heel. Ligaments, you just never know how they're going to react even after you fix them. And even after you come back, they always say you're not right away.
You're talking about all of these hunting for matchups that the Rams did. Why is it that the Texans can't hunt those matchups to get Nico involved? That's a criticism for the offensive coordinator. Defense played well. Rams made the plays when they needed to, both offensively and defensively. Because the offense looked bad, people thought the defense was bad. Wrong. Great defense. Danielle Hunter, cricket emoji, cricket emoji, cricket emoji. Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line. Get your thoughts on this one. We'll hit the Kaylee thing. Haven't hit the Kaylee thing as well. Also, do you notice how many penalties the Texans had yesterday? Do you notice they had 11 penalties for 80 yards? You know where the Texans have stacked up the last couple of years in penalties? Last year they were top 10 in both penalties called against them and penalty yardage allowed. 2 years ago they were in the top 5 in penalties called against them and penalty yardage allowed. At what point do we get critical of the Texans for being one of the most penalized teams in the NFL? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, I got to tell you about the greatness that is Monument Chevrolet. Monument Chevrolet is the very best. Talk to our guys over there at Monument Chevrolet over at the listener party on Friday. They're pumped up. They're excited. They love the fact that you keep going out there and mentioning ESPN. They love the fact that you're coming out there and buying some vehicles. And look, all the people that do that, they go to Monument Chevrolet because they trust the people in Monument Chevrolet. They're not gonna mess with you about prices. They're not gonna jack up the sticker price and then have you negotiate, try to get it down. You never get it down to where you're comfortable. Monument Chevrolet is not that dealership. They're transparent. They're not gonna hassle you with pricing. It's why Houstonians have been trusting Monument Chevrolet for 50 years. 5 decades, and they've helped generations of families get into new vehicles, and these families keep coming back because they trust the people at Monument Chevrolet. And they trust the people at Monument Chevrolet because it's a family feel, friendly atmosphere. They hire great people, which leads to the outstanding culture that they have. It's why they've been in the business for 50 years and a pillar of the community. So get on out there to Monument Chevrolet, buy your next new or pre-owned vehicle. Maybe it's the Suburban. The Suburban's been around for like 100 years. The Silverado 1500. Get yourself a nice truck. We are in Texas after all. Maybe you want to go with the new electric variety. The Blazer EV could be for you. So get a fair deal, a fast deal, and an easy deal without wasting your time and aggravating stressful negotiations. No tricks, no time wasting, no hidden charges. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, do it now at Monument Chevrolet. Check out their full inventory at monumentchevrolet.com or go visit them in person. Their lot is massive. 225 at Bellway H, where you can find it at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
ESPN
97.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So, Texans, do they have a penalty problem? Mm-hmm. Is it a D'Amico Ryan's problem?
I don't know if I could put that one on D'Amico, per se. I think it's still a problem that has carried over from last season. I think that we always hear him say, we'll handle it internally, you know, but everybody's held accountable. Well, there's plenty of guys to be held accountable on the fact that you still had double-digit penalties. A lot of them were stifling to drives you had and you had momentum and things going on that they still seem to happen way too much. Yeah. So If you want to put it on the head coach, I think everybody reports to him. But from a head coach perspective, it's a shame that you had to have something happen on the field to show you that you still haven't made the necessary improvements to now have to handle it in season.
Like, the one game, whatever. It's not the one game for me. 11 penalties, 80 yards, that ain't great. This is going on 3 years now. They were top five 2 years ago. They were top 10 last year in both penalties and penalty yardage. And I do think that D'Amico coaches a very physical style of football defensively. I think a very physical style of football is going to lead to a high number of penalties. Now, that said, do you want the trade-off? Like, do you want to be a soft defense that allows a bunch of yards and never gets penalized? Or would you rather be a defense that has a few more penalties, but everybody's going to fear you, you're going to knock receivers in the helmet, they're going to need 20 stitches and then come back and terrorize you? I rather have the physical team that gets more penalties. It's the little, like, and I can live with, like, the defensive stuff. Like, you know, maybe you get a late hit every now and then, don't like it. Maybe you get a, you know, a crown of the helmet thing every now and then, don't like it. Rather you not be able to do it, I'll take the trade-off. It's more like the procedural penalties, like the jumping offsides, or the, like, EJ Speed comes in for a play when everybody in the world knows they're going into a hard count and they're able to get an encroachment. Dalton Schultz, I think it was like a third and short, and he jumps. False start on Dalton Schultz. Those are the ones that drive me crazy. If you're going to be a tough, physical, swarming defense and you have a couple of hits that are late over the course of a season, totally okay with that. That is your brand of football. But the encroachments, the false starts, that's where I get annoyed. That's the area where that I think it really needs to put an end to that.
I think that's totally fair. But I think that when you look at the guys in particular, the Tomlinson penalty, where he jumped early, too, that drove me nuts.
Yeah, that was a big spot.
Yeah, it was massive.
I think that was ahead of a third and short.
Yeah, it was, again, you created a far more difficult situation than you had to. You have to use Blake Fisher just simply because of all the injuries, and he gets a face mask penalty where even if you can just keep going with the play, but you let go right away, a lot of times that can get lost in the shuffle where they're not going to call that. When you, like, grab on after your fingers are in the mask and you don't let go, it's the easiest call in the world to make.
Mm-hmm. Like, I could do, I mean, you have a team that wants to be physical, right? And they want to, like, you know, they want to hammer Devontae. Like, Devontae Adams goes over the middle, Henry To'o crushes him, right? No penalty there. He does it later, penalty. Okay, like, you're going to live with those. Like, that is your mentality. That's your nature. But it's the procedural stuff that drives me up the wall. And look, maybe it's the OC blame. Maybe, I don't know who you point the finger there. Any other coach would have been crucified by now on those penalties. Something has to give. Can't put penalties on D'Amico when the penalties often come from the O-line or illegal formations, Tyler and Conroe. I mean, he's still the head man, though. Like, he's the head man. Like, if you're going to allow it, that means you're going to allow it. Like, I understand what you're saying, Tyler and Conroe. Like, I'm with you there mostly as well. But as the head coach,
it all falls under you. It's all under your umbrella.
It's all under your umbrella.
Yep.
Any other coach would be crucified for sure. Nick Cayley's a bum. The offense was bad. One game in, Nick Cayley's a play caller. You're aware with him.
It's a work in progress. I'm not gonna jump off the ledge and jump off the deep end after one game against a really good defensive team and his first time ever calling plays in the NFL and assume that it was going to be perfect. Assume that it was good. Look, I think you can go back again, not just on penalties. I think there was a lot of times they were breaking the huddle late. But I think a lot of that can, again, be associated to a guy calling plays for the first time in a real speed, real time, real personnel NFL game. And he wasn't great. But I'm not going to sit there and close the door and throw him out with the bat.
No. It's more your evaluation of him after a game.
Yeah, my evaluation of him is that it's a work in progress that has to get better.
Yeah. I mean,
play calling alone was way too vanilla.
Kind of saw it coming with the Rams' first game, all that stuff. It sounds like we're making excuses. The biggest thing that I look at, how do you only scheme up five targets for Nico Collins?
First thing, again, because I had to play catch up because I was occupied all weekend with coaching. So before I even watched the game, I looked at the box score. And that was one of the first things, because we had the conversation, who was going to be the second, who's going to have second most receptions and all those things. When I saw Nico like three or four slots down the pecking order on receptions, I was like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing that I'm looking at. I'm like, hope that's not a trend, because that's your best skill guy. And the other thing that jumped out to me, I didn't notice a lot of high-level skill from your skill guys? Like, I don't – I think that this team has a skill issue – I think this team has a skill issue problem from its skill players. Outside of Nico Collins, where is your juice? Like, where are your, like, electric athletes? Like, Jalen Noel is supposed to be a guy who comes in here, like, he's electric. He's juicing, you know, one game, whatever. Got targeted twice. Jaden Higgins, he was actually your leading receiver, 32 yards. Led you in receiving yards with 32, Jaden Higgins. But, like, Xavier Hutchinson's playing a ton of snaps. Justin Watson's playing a ton of snaps. Dalton Schultz was targeted five times. He and Nico Collins tied with the five targets as the most targeted player. Cade Stover, four targets. Dare targeted twice. These skill guys, I don't see a whole lot of juice out of those skill guys other than Nico Collins. Justin Watson was on the field a ton.
Watson bothered me a little bit. Now, the one he was interfered with twice. I thought he still could have caught one of them. But
where's your juice? Xavier Hutchinson played 43 snaps. Stover, 36. Watson, 35. Higgins, 27. Dare, 17. Like, where is your electricity? Like Jordan Whittington, who, you know, Rams, Texas. I think he went to Cuero. I think he was a gobbler. He's got juice. He's your fourth receiver, and that guy is a tough guy to bring down. Where's the Texans' juice? They have no juice. None of their skill guys have juice other than Nico Collins. Maybe Noel, maybe Higgins, but you don't even trust those guys to play more than Justin Watson.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's because they're rookies that they didn't have the confidence in them. I don't know if it's as the game progressed when one of your rookies had a ball caught that had turned out being an interception that and Woody Marks didn't get a whole lot of opportunity, but he didn't do a whole lot in carries when he got it. And again, that's a product of the offensive line as well. But I don't know if it's the whole Jeff Van Gundy philosophy of I don't trust rookies. I think the biggest thing to me would be that you would need all hands on deck. They were definitely, and we knew about Kaylee's offense, he was going to utilize the tight end. He was maybe overly so trying to utilize and get involved the tight end. But it's a fair point to ask, why didn't you at least try them more? Especially in the passing game when you got guys that are explosive.
I mean, Higgins made a good play the first quarter. I mean, went over the middle, mm-hmm. little deep post, took a huge hit. I was scared he broke his rib. You got Justin Watson playing over half of your snaps. Your team doesn't have juice, man. Like, you're not – and I thought that was something that they were going after, and obviously they were. They drafted Higgins in the second. They drafted Noel in the third. They're getting outplayed. They're getting outsnapped by Xavier Hutchinson and Justin Watson. If Xavier Hutchinson's playing 68% of your snaps and Justin Watson's playing 56% of your snaps, and yes, Christian Kirk's hurt, I understand that. But if those guys are playing 68 and 56% of your snaps, a majority of your snaps, well over half of your snaps in Hutchinson's case and over a half of your snaps in Watson's case, you don't have juice. This offense doesn't have juice. They can't block. They can run a little up the middle, nothing outside, and they have no juice other than Nico Collins. And, oh, by the way, they're down to one tight end because Cade Stover broke his foot.
Yeah, that's the bigger issue going forward, right? I think that, again, just like we were talking about with the offensive line, there really isn't a huge, quick solution and fix. Now, there's probably more likely a tight end or two out there that you might be able to obtain or that might be dangling out there from the cuts leading into the regular season, but I don't think it's a solution there either. That's going to be interesting because you don't know how long Kirk's going to be out.
I know.
And if it's truly that you don't trust the young guys, well, then why the hell didn't you keep John Metchie around or guys that you do trust? And then to your point, if a guy like Hutchinson should be a guy that you could put anywhere and feel like he's going to get open for you and at least try him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to blame him for trading Metchie. Like, it was a crowded room. He might not have even made the team. Even if he's on this team, is he playing more than Higgins and Noel? Probably not. I don't blame Kasira for that trade. It's just I'm a little worried about the skill guys. Just an observation. Is D'Amico too cool of a coach? It's only one game, but there was very little discipline.
Again, it's under his realm. Everything's under his realm. But I don't know. Some teams have quality control coaches. But again, a lot of it is on the players too. They have to be able to understand. You mentioned speed. The speed penalty drove me nuts because not only did he jump, but he possibly could have gotten back before the snap, but he ran right into the center when he turned around too, which, you know, made the dead ball at that point, and it's definitely on you. I just think, and the Fisher thing drives me nuts too, to have a guy drafted that highly that makes mistakes, not only when he's on the field, but then makes a mistake like that, and you don't think that's going to be the only one he makes.
I don't think he's too cool of a coach, Dexter. I like DeMeco.
I didn't catch the first one. He thought that DeMeco's too cool?
Yeah. Dexter, you just traded for a tight end. Yeah, Harrison Bryant's probably going to be signed to the 53. He's currently on the practice squad, but I mean, Harrison Bryant wasn't, he was supposed to be a practice squad guy. At best, a third stringer. Now he's your backup tight end. He's your tight end, too. And by the way, Kate Stover played more snaps than Schultz. So maybe you're replacing a starter as opposed to his backup. Texans need a high draft pick, offensive lineman and running back. I think Kaylee went up against maybe his worst matchup. And the Rams are a playoff team. Let's give it another week or two. That's fair. This team misses Tank Dell badly. There's your juice. Tank Dell's your juice. Jalen Noel's supposed to be your Tank Dell replacement. Let's be honest. Week one is still the preseason. Okay.
I think that is something that I've witnessed personally with certain teams in the past. But I don't know that that's an excuse for this team.
Play calling was awful. I could have called a better game. I agree with you, Texter. I totally agree with you that you, a listener to the Killer Bees, a member of the Hive, would have called a better game than Nick Haley. I have all the faith in the world with you. Through one game, he's Bobby Slowick. Even early, though, I hope. Feed Nico. Possible Stroud isn't ever a top-tier quarterback we thought the Texans might have after his rookie year.
I didn't follow all of that.
Is it possible that Stroud isn't ever a top-tier quarterback that we thought he would be after his rookie season?
Is it possible? Yes.
I think they could be ruining him.
I don't think that that's the case.
I think he's regressed. Turn on the film of him as a rookie, and then right now he's. One game. I'm not defining anything. Give me six games.
And it's possible that the regression is because of what he's been through, and then at a certain point you just PTSD it. Mm-hmm. But I still believe that he's a top tier quarterback in this league.
Will Tank Dell still bring the juice? It's a good question. I mean, three knee surgeries, man. That's tough. Three knee surgeries is tough. Stop hiring OCs that have never called plays in a game. Yeah. Yeah. Run. No play action.
It was.
Are they about to David Carr CJ, Jason? I think they could. I think it's in play. I think it's in play. Not there yet, but in play. After watching the Ravens-Bills last night, this team is nowhere close to where they need to be. They're certainly nowhere close to those teams.
No. Look, predictable at the very least. And because we've seen it in the not-so-distant past, mm-hmm. It was even more predictable. The runs and the just, you know, completely you were playing not to lose instead of trying to win in a lot of cases.
Yeah. And then one thing on special teams, maybe a couple things. I thought Fairbairn was good. Made three kicks. All your points came from Jaime Fairbairn's right toe. Opening kick, Damian Pierce. Did you see that? I went back. I didn't notice this live, really. I really, you know, settling in, watching the game. But I went back and watched the five? No, that was the Jalen Noel fair catch on the punt.
Okay.
Jalen Noel fair caught a punt at the five.
Yeah. Not smart.
Welcome to the NFL. Rookie mistake. No, Damian Pierce, like, let a squibber. Because I think that, like, with this new dynamic kickoff rule, you're going to see a lot of this. It was like a little squibber. And Damian Pierce looked like Yiner Diaz trying to catch a Framber Valdez curveball. Like, he just skipped right onto the end zone. Right on into the end zone. Had to go pick it up, put it on a knee.
Because honestly, I was fast forwarding to get to the plays.
I didn't notice it live.
Yeah, I did not notice.
Yeah, I went back. It kind of bothered me. Like, you're the designated kick returner, and you can't field a squib. Easier said than done. I get it, but it's like, yeah, that's Yiner back there. All right, 713-780-ESPN HRMP listener line. The Texans weren't the only Houston team losing yesterday. The Astros lost yesterday too. The Astros, good, bad, ugly from the Rangers series after dropping 2-3. We start with the bad. We start with the ugly. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN, 97.5, ESPN, 92.5. You know what would have been a better weekend than watching all these teams lose? Being out at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape professional teams in your city losing. Escape the hustle and bustle of talking about your offensive coordinator being in over his head. Or work, traffic, whatever's causing you stress. Get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston and enjoy some rest and relaxation. Escape the city and enjoy the great outdoors. Book that stay at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com, the website from the open green spaces, wildlife you don't see in the cities, beautiful, majestic trees, and also some of the best fishing in Texas. You can't beat it. They got the two creeks right on the outside of the property, on the boundary of the property. Fantastic. You can kayak the water. They have a catch and release pond in the middle of the property, which is great for the kiddos. And it's only 90 minutes from Houston. That's right. You can escape the city without going too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. From hiking their 92 acres of property, kayaking their water, little pickleball. How about that? Or just hang out by the pool with a drink, too. They're building a lazy river. It's going to be outstanding, too. Two Creeks Crossing Resort always taking care of their visitors. We were out there at the beginning of summer. Food truck out there both nights. They let us know with text. They take care of you. They had live music on a Saturday. It was fantastic. We stayed in the treehouse. The treehouse is really cool. Kids loved it. Branham Kid, Branham Baby had a great time. But they got the glamping, too. They got cabins. You can pull up the RV. They have the perfect stay for everybody. So book that stay now. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. That's TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Texans could have got Kingsbury instead of Slowick. They could have also gotten, Chip Kelly.
But I don't know. That was a whole hell of a lot of money. Not that the Texans are worried about money.
How much did he sign for?
I think he's the highest paid OC in the league. I don't think it was quite head coaching money, but it was pretty big.
You think Kelly, if all things were equal, would be with the Raiders or the Texans? Look, it may be the $6 million. That's more than D'Amico makes.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to justify $6 million to Chip Kelly.
It's a lot of money.
I think D'Amico makes 3.2, which you can't hire an offensive coordinator for $6 million when your head coach makes 3.2. So not only would you commit to $6 million for Kelly, but you're probably going to have to pay D'Amico at least $8 million.
Oh, yeah. You're paying – yeah, so – you're on the hook for a whole hell of a lot more than your budget had currently been set at.
Google says D'Amico makes 4.6. So not more than 3, but 4.6, still less than Chip. How much does Pete Carroll make?
Maybe 7?
I mean, he's got to be more than 6.
Right.
It's got to be more than 6 million. Oh, my goodness.
12?
This can't be right.
What'd it say?
It says 15 million.
No way.
Pete Carroll's making 15 million?
Is that Google AI?
But there's multiple places that say this.
Well, then, and they're legit?
It looks like it. I would have 15? Not guessed that he makes 15.
I'd come back,
15.
Too. I'd come back, coach, for that.
So they spent 15 on Pete Carroll and 6 on Chip Kelly? That's over $20 million on head coach OC. That is nuts. That is so much
that
money.
That is a massive
Ben Johnson's
amount of
making 13 mil per year.
Ben Johnson, 13. See, yeah. That one makes a little bit more sense because he was like the hottest commodity
hot
in the NFL for 3 years. Yeah. Pete Carroll's like 80.
Yeah.
Sheesh. That's some money.
That's like the Dusty deal on steroids, right? I thought I was done with coaching, but if you really want me that bad, how much are you willing to pay me? Oh, that's what you're going to pay me? Yep, I'll be there tomorrow.
That's nuts. They better make the playoffs to pay in their head coach OC $21 million. I wonder if Chip Kelly's the succession plan.
I would imagine if he succeeds, right? If he's effective as an OC, I would think there's 100% a contingency plan that either he gets it or he's top billing first crack at it.
Man. All right, 713-780 ESPN. Good, bad, ugly from the Astros weekend. Start with the bad and the ugly. What you got?
From the Astros perspective, we're starting with the good. Did you say starting with the bad and the ugly or the good?
No, the bad and the ugly.
Bad and ugly to me is Jose Altuve, and it's twofold, right? He's still not hitting the baseball. He was 1 for 13 for the weekend. But 1 for 13 still batting where he's batting is excruciatingly painful to watch. I understand that he snaps out of these things. I understand that no one's saying that he's washed, but when he's going through it to this level and you have other people that you think could help you with the problems that you have, like being able to get hits with runners in scoring position, I think it's one, Altuve was bad and it's getting ugly, and two, that a spot is still hitting him in the top 2, 3, and 4 in this lineup. That's tough on me.
Yep. That's you want to move him down yet?
I do.
Where would you move him?
As low as 6.
I'm down.
Yep.
Sign me up.
Until I start seeing signs that he is getting back to the old Jose Altuve, or at least that he's not, he seems like he is pressing to another level. The way he's had his body language and everything that he's trying to do, even trying to bunt the one time. I got to see a couple of good at-bats before I even consider him anything other than that.
Yep. What else you got?
I've got both right fielders, or at least written in as right fielders, but Smith and Sanchez were combined 1 of 13. That ain't going to cut it. Mm-mm. And then McCullers, whether it's the Manfred rule or not, you still have no control. You're still walking guys. You still don't look like you have command. That was frustrating as hell. That whole extra inning, all three extra innings, was excruciating.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God!
I don't put too much blame on McCullers. You're right about the control. I just automatically
walk people, right?
Yeah, but I mean, were you trying to walk somebody to you know, set up the double play? Like, I'm giving him an excuse here, but you're right. His command hadn't been good. Like, it's hard for me to put any blame on a reliever giving up a run in the Manfred man. Like, you're starting with a runner at second, nobody out. So, a lot of reasons to be critical of McCullers. I didn't really assign him much blame in that game specifically. I had Yiner costing Fromber a run yesterday early in that game because he can't catch a sinker.
Yeah.
He can't catch the baseball. Your catcher cannot catch. That's an issue. You mentioned the extra inning game. The Astros had a runner at second with no outs three consecutive times and could not score one single run.
And you don't, the unwritten rule is when you're on the road, you don't bunt them over.
I'm not a fan of it. Right. Some people like it. Some people like the small ball.
But when
ball,
you're in a situation like that, and offensively they are less than two, and if you couldn't do it the first time or the second time, I mean, at least take your chances that you're going to play another inning at the very worst. But you might be able to squeak one out that way, because what you're trying to do to get a run across was embarrassing.
I'm with you. No, I'm with you. I don't like bunting there. Some people do. I'm not a huge fan of it. What else did you have? Did we cover it?
The uglies, just the runners in scoring position Friday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
3 for 20. And even with the outburst of the Saturday game with the double digits, 11 for 40 in the series with runners in scoring position.
That's insane.
It's just, and it's, this isn't the only series. This has been consistent now for about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Junior Bronco says start Caratini. I'm okay with it.
I'm fine. Okay. Look, Caratini in a short sample size, right? He had 6 at bats. He was 3 for 6. He can hit.
I mean, yeah, I think Caratini gives you better at bats. Yonder's going to run into more. Like, he's going to run into more homers.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a chance of changing a game, but he can also
switch
ruin
hitter,
game
makes
for you.
Contact, and he's. I like him behind the dish. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, maybe more of a 50-50 split as opposed to, like, Yiner being the primary guy. Maybe that's the answer as opposed to just, like, flipping them totally. But, all right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. We'll get to the good from the Astros weekend, if there was any. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, and ESPN 92.5. You always know Walmart is good, though. Maybe you're in a sour mood. You want to order some good comfort groceries, you can do that at Walmart. You don't even have to leave the couch. How nice is that? It's awesome. Houston, the Walmart you thought you knew is now new. Who knew? The Walmart has more than a half a billion items online. Find a huge selection online that you can find in stores at Walmart.com. Branham family's been ordering online for Walmart for quite some time now, and it's wonderful for someone like me and the family that doesn't have a ton of time. We know you don't either. So order with Walmart. You don't like to mess with the crowd, at least I don't. Doesn't want to turn off the game. That's got to be you, right? So we order online with Walmart and we get all of our groceries without even having to leave the house. It is fantastic. Oh, that's expensive. Online grocery shopping costs more. I know what you're saying, but it's not true at Walmart. Grocery prices are the same for delivery as they are in store, and of course, because it's Walmart, you already know the prices are low. And what I love about it, they're fast. Walmart can deliver in as fast as an hour. Going online at Walmart.com, ordering the groceries is going to save you a ton of time. Use Express Delivery to get all of the eligible things you need from Walmart, like the groceries, even home goods. How about prescriptions? They'll deliver your prescriptions, too. Walmart is changing the game. When it comes to feeding your family, hosting a tailgate, or throwing a party, think Walmart for those grocery needs. Start an order now at Walmart.com.
ESPN 97.5.